Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Last month, the 17th round of closed-door Trans-Pacific Partnership Free Trade Agreement negotiations took place in Lima, Peru. The 12-member partnership has been described as the biggest free trade agreement since the establishment of the World Trade Organization back in 1995. But despite its enormous size and scale, the draft agreement has been shrouded in secrecy. Several documents have been leaked, and according to those leaks, Public Citizen says this trade deal would offshore millions of jobs, free the bankers from oversight, ban Buy America policies, decrease access to medicine, flood the U.S. with unsafe food and products, and empower corporations to skirt environmental and health safety laws. So on today's Your Call, we are continuing our Agenda for a New Economy series by talking about the Trans-Pacific Partnership. What are the key provisions? What do the leaked documents tell us? And who's involved in these talks? Today, we're joined by Ben Beachy, Research Director with Public Citizen's Global Trade Watch. He investigates the impacts of U.S. trade policy on jobs, regulation, development, and sovereignty. Hi, Ben. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
Nice to have you. We're also joined by Katitza Rodriguez, an international rights director at the Electronic Frontier Foundation, where she focuses on international privacy issues and copyright. Katitza is just back from Peru, where she was part of the actions that took place outside of the negotiations. Hi, Katitza. Welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Thank you for joining us. So, Ben, let's start off with you. This has received sporadic attention in the media, but for the most part, the negotiations have been held behind closed doors. How big is this trade deal? A lot of groups say it's the biggest one yet.
Yeah, it would be the largest expansion of the much decried model of trade that we saw first with the North American Free Trade Agreement or NAFTA. This is a model of trade that has been rejected by majorities of Democrats, Republicans, and Independents. So it's a uniquely transpartisan issue in the United States. Since NAFTA, mainly because of the offshoring of jobs that we've seen, the undermining of critical consumer safeguards that we've seen through these deals. And yet, the Trans-Pacific Partnership would continue that blueprint that was started in NAFTA and actually expand it still further. It would be the largest expansion to date since the WTO, the World Trade Organization, the largest trade agreement that the United States is trying to conclude. It also, beyond being really large, it includes the United States and 11 other Pacific Rim countries. It also is seen as an open-ended agreement. It's called a docking agreement, which means that any country potentially could sign on to this deal in the future. And so some analysts are calling this, potentially the last major trade agreement that the United States signs, in the sense that, China could sign on if it would like to. Other countries in the region could sign on as well. And so it is very large. One thing to note about it, I'd say at the outset, you kind of ticked off a number of the concerns that not just Public Citizen, but a number of groups have brought forward with regard to this deal, about offshoring, about its impacts on access to medicines and public health, impacts on the environment, and the extra powers that would give multinational corporations to attack health care and environmental policies, internet freedom, financial regulations. All these critical issues are not typically considered to be trade, and that's because this deal, the Trans-Pacific Partnership, is not principally about trade. There are 29 chapters in the deal that we know of. We don't even know the names of some of them because they've not been revealed. But from what we can gather from inside sources, it appears that about only five of these 29 chapters are actually about what we traditionally define as trade. exchanging auto parts for corn, for example. And most of this does not have to do with trading goods. It has to do with sweeping provisions implicating many facets of our daily lives, from the food we eat to our ability to access the web pages that we'd like to visit each day.
And a lot of the information that groups are trying to publicize is based on the leaks, and we'll talk about those details. But first, the administration has been working on this for the past 3 years?
That's correct, yeah. Yeah, they've been working on it for 3 years, and it's largely behind closed doors, as you mentioned. We still have not yet seen the draft negotiating texts of this deal. Not only have we not seen it, not only has the public not seen it, but members of Congress have still not seen the draft negotiating text of this sweeping deal, which is just incredible. They hope to conclude negotiations by October of this year, after more than 3 years of negotiating it. And our own members of Congress, who set policy, who are elected to decide such things as financial regulations and access to internet policies and environmental and consumer safeguards, all of which are implicated by this deal, have not even got a chance to look at it yet. And that's incredible in its own right, but it's even more incredible when you consider that the Obama administration has proclaimed itself as committed to open government, saying it's the most committed administration thus yet to transparency. We've seen, I think, through some of the other news that's been coming out recently about the NSA and about crackdowns on whistleblowers, that that there perhaps is a broader problem here with this administration's failure to keep up to its commitment of transparency. One of the ways in which we've seen that failure is in trade policy, in that the Bush administration, which is not really cited as it's some paragon of transparency, when it was negotiating a similarly sweeping deal called the Free Trade Area of the Americas, it was the same model, also a big deal. It failed because it was widely rejected. But when it was negotiating that, it published the entire thing, the negotiating text, before negotiations were over. They published what was on the table online for anyone to see. That was the Bush administration. And now we have a similarly sweeping trade deal that they've been negotiating for 3 years, that not only not letting us see it online, but not letting members of Congress see it, and they hope to conclude the thing in a matter of months. It's really incredible.
That is, so if we wanted to call our congresspeople to say, hey, I disagree with A, B, and C in the trade deal, they wouldn't even know what we were talking about, or they would basically have the same information that we have.
They would have a lot of the same information, because what we've got is on the basis of leaks alone. Several of the chapters have been leaked, and that's why we're so concerned, is because of what we've seen in those leaks. But yeah, most members of Congress have not had access to the text, and so they'd be looking at the same thing that all of us are looking at.
Are they asking for access?
Yes, they are. They are this, and they've been asking several different times. One member of Congress last year, actually a Republican member of Congress, published one of the chapters online. He himself got a hold of a leaked text on intellectual property and published it online on a website because he was so angry that he was not able to have access to the text. And he was the chair of the Government Oversight Committee, so he felt that in his role as oversight, he needed to make sure the U.S. people saw this critical trade agreement that's being hatched.
And who's that congressman?
Daryl Issa.
Okay, from California.
And but there have been others, Ron Wyden, who is actually on the committee, the Senate Finance Committee, that has the subcommittee, in fact, that has explicit jurisdiction over trade policy. He stood up and gave a speech in about a year ago on the Senate floor, saying, this Trans-Pacific Partnership is being negotiated, and my staff don't even have access to the text. He complained very loudly and said he himself, it sounded like he was quoting, a press release by, some consumer or environmental or labor group saying that, these corporations have access to this text, but I don't as a senator, and a senator that's on the Trade Policy Committee. Because he complained loudly enough and it got quite a bit of press, the U.S. the Obama administration granted him limited access, but still did not grant access to his staff, who manage the details of these accords, and it was much more limited than what we've seen before. So only after some kicking and screaming have members of Congress even gotten access, and in so doing have gotten a very limited access. A short time frame. You can't copy down notes. You can't have your staff come see it, et cetera. This is just ridiculous. This thing should be published online for all to see. This is you cannot rewrite vast swaths of domestic policies that are public interest policies and expect the public and their members of Congress to not be able to see that.
That is Ben Beachy, Research Director with Public Citizens Global Trade Watch, and we are talking today about the Trans-Pacific Partnership Free Trade Agreement, poised to become the largest free trade agreement in the world. Katitza Rodriguez is an International Rights Director at the EFF, and she just returned from Peru, where they had the 17th round of closed-door talks. The 12 countries involved in these talks include Japan, Australia, Brunei, Canada, Chile, Malaysia, Mexico, New Zealand, Singapore, the U.S., Vietnam, and Peru. So, Katitza, you were outside with a number of groups protesting what was going on behind closed doors. Just talk about what the experience is like. What actually happens at these negotiations?
Well, in the venue, they were negotiating what it will be the future of our internet rights. We believe that we have and deserve a seat to know what's going on there, because they are just dealing with what we believe it's our digital rights, and it will have a huge impact globally, because as the previous speaker was explaining, one of the major concerns of TPP is the capacity to rewrite global rules, in this case, on copyright enforcement. This means that all countries will be required to match their domestic laws and policies to what it's on the text of the TPP. And this is a big problem for many countries, because if in the future, if there is no law, or you have a very good law, or in the future you want to change your law, you will have to renegotiate the treaty if you want to modify your national law. This, in many countries, in many developing countries, will further entrench controversial, and even in the United States, will further entrench controversial aspect of Peruvian copyright law, and will restrict the ability of the Congress to engage in domestic law reform. So outside of the venue, the TPP, EFF have the opportunity to work with our local allies in Lima, and we launch a campaign called nonnegotiable.pe in Spanish to try to educate the general public about the provisions of the TPP. Among the main concerns of the provisions are one provision based on the leak that was mentioned, is placing greater liability on internet intermediaries. And this provision will force the adoption of the U.S. Copyright law on internet intermediaries to other countries. These laws compel create a safe harbor regime where countries can internet companies could take down content from the internet if it's an infringement of copyright. This law, while it has been good, it has been provided certain safe harbor for internet companies in case of copyright infringement made by third parties. It has been abused. And so many countries have learned from these mistakes and have rewrite their own national laws right now. For instance, one of the most forward-looking laws is the Chilean copyright law, which currently establishes a judicial notice and takedown regime, which provide more protections for internet user free of expression rights.
And Katia, let me just ask you quickly, can you stay on for a few more minutes with us?
Yes.
Okay, great. So we'll talk about what this means for internet users, but when you say that in these negotiations in Peru, just again last month, the 17th round of closed-door talks about this new trade deal, they were coming up with rules for the internet. Do you know who was involved in these talks?
Well, who were involved in the talks? Well, it was inside the venue or outside the venue?
Inside, inside.
It was just the negotiators of the 11 countries who were dealing with the TPP.
It was
a meeting, the 70,000 meeting of the TPP, where all the governments and negotiators of all of United States, Japan, Australia, Peru, Malaysia, Vietnam, Brunei met together to discuss the text.
And so based on the rules that they want to change, how will that affect our overall Internet experience?
Well, as I said, it will rewrite global rules on intellectual property rights, and this means that we'll provide it, one of the provisions based on the leak in 2000 that was published earlier a couple of years ago, it will provide greater liability on Internet intermediaries for many countries. This provision could force several countries outside the United States to copy the U.S. law on notice and takedown regime. This law create a safe harbor regime where Internet intermediaries, like, for instance, Google or YouTube, will have to notify a user if a copyright holder will have to send a notification to YouTube saying that this video violates copyright his copyright according to the copyright holder. So he notified YouTube. YouTube will have to take down the video and notify the other party whether to tell them that the video has been taken down. The problem of this system of notice and takedown regime is that having abused, and many times the copyright holder has been requesting to take down materials that are not actually infringement of copyright, but there are fair use and there are legitimate uses of Internet that Internet users do posting their videos online. This is a huge problem, even more in other countries, when the system can be easily abused. This is why there are countries like, for instance, Chile, who has tried to solve this problem and have adopted a new copyright law that tried to use a judicial notice and takedown regime that will allow instead of a privatized system of enforcement of copyright law.
So Chile's new law would be overwritten by the rules in the TPP.
Yes, they will have to rewrite their very innovative copyright law. That's a problem in Latin America because there are not many countries that have limitations of liability on Internet intermediaries. So it's really setting the standard in the region.
And Katita, before we let you go, the Electronic Frontier Foundation has a number of supporters. What is the dialogue between you and your supporters in terms of, you know, what are you telling people to do to speak out on the TPP?
We have an ongoing campaign on our website when we are telling them to please don't trade away our Internet freedoms, and we are asking to speak out against the TPP. It's on our website in www.eff.org, and you can sign the petition, you can put your zip code where you live, and we will contact your representative to tell them to speak out against this very sweeping and dark treaty.
All right. Well, Katita, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's Katita Rodriguez, an international rights director at the Electronic Frontier Foundation, just back from Peru, where she was part of the actions taking place outside of the 17th round of closed-door Trans-Pacific Partnership Free Trade Agreement negotiations. And if this goes through, it would become the largest free trade agreement in the world. So what questions do you have about the TPP? Have you heard much about it? As Ben Beachy with Public Citizens Global Trade Watch said today, the Bush administration actually put the details online. The Obama administration has not. Most members of Congress have not even seen the details of this largest trade agreement. yet. And a lot of groups have seen some leaks, and so they are letting citizens know what is in this based on the leak. So what questions do you have about the TPP? What are your overall thoughts on free trade agreements? And what questions do you have about the differences between the Obama administration and other administrations on trade? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. Ben Beachy is Research Director with Public Citizens Global Trade Watch. And now I would like to welcome Arthur Stamoulis to the show. Arthur is Executive Director of Citizens Trade Campaign, a coalition of labor, environmental, religious, family, farm, and consumer organizations. Hi, Arthur. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. So Citizen Trade also got some their hands on these leaks. I mean, what did it really reveal to you about what is in this deal? How does this differ from past trade deals?
Yeah, so what this shows is that the Obama administration is going, you know, even further than the Bush administration before it in terms of the rights and the privileges it gives to transnational corporations. So the leaked in, intellectual property chapter, among other things, shows the administration pushing for medicine patents to be extended beyond their current 20 years, meaning longer periods of times where people will be paying monopoly drug prices for life-saving medications. And Doctors Without Borders has called this literally the worst trade proposal ever for access to medicine. And then the leaked investment chapter shows the administration pushing for the so-called investor-to-state dispute resolution provisions that would grant transnational corporations the power to challenge virtually any new environmental or consumer safety law, regulation, court decision, permitting decision, you name it, that negatively affects their expectation of profits. These are private tribunals that circumvent the U.S. court system, any other country's domestic judicial system, and they essentially set up a parallel justice system for the exclusive use of transnational corporations. So this is a very, very radical pact, and it builds off of the devastating pacts like NAFTA and CAFTA that we've seen in past years.
And did the details come as a surprise to you?
I'm a fairly cynical individual, so they weren't a huge shock. I mean, I think one of the things that was surprising is that, you know, President Obama got into the White House really promising and pledging to reform past trade agreements like the North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA, like the World Trade Organization. It's my belief that, you know, that's one of the reasons why he was elected president instead of Hillary Clinton, making really clear promises about trade policy reform in Midwestern states in particular, where trade is a major voting issue. He's done a complete 180 on that, and he's pushing for, you know, really not only more of the same, but a radical expansion both in terms of, you know, the geographic and economic scale of these pacts and also, you know, the powers that they give to transnational corporations to, you know, ship our jobs overseas, to undercut environmental and consumer safety provisions, banking regulations, and, you know, just the secrecy around the pact is also something that, I won't say it's unprecedented, but it's a big rollback from what we've seen in recent years.
And just quickly before we go to break, what can citizens do about this? I mean, Ben earlier said that Congress doesn't really even know what's in this. So if we call our senator, like Senator Feinstein, for example, she knows basically what we know at this point.
Well, we're asking people to call their members of Congress to urge them to oppose fast-tracking the TPP, oppose, you know, allowing the TPP to be rushed through Congress in a process that circumvents ordinary amendment review and debate procedures. And you can ask your member of Congress, have you seen this text? Will you send me a copy of it? And that alone will, help get that, you know, congressional offices thinking about this and what it means for their constituents and the issues that they care about.
Yeah, and after the break, we'll definitely talk about Fast Track. On today's Your Call, it's our Agenda for a New Economy series, and we're talking about the Trans-Pacific Partnership. If this goes through, it'll be the largest free trade agreement in the world. The Obama administration wants it done and signed in October. So what's in it? What questions do you have? have, and if you work in the industries that might be affected, how will this change your industry? It's your call. We'll be back after this.
Public Radio KALW, a program that depends on engaged listeners. We invite you to join today's conversation by calling 866-798-TALK. That's 866-798-8255. Or you can post a comment or question at Your Call Radio. There you will also find links to today's show.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we'll have a conversation about the growth of immigration detention centers. Over 33,000 immigrants are detained daily in over 250 facilities across the United States, costing $2 billion a year. So what explains the growth? Who's being detained? And how will the immigration bill affect mass detention? And then Thursday, we'll have a conversation about the NSA's spying program and civil liberties under the Obama administration. Friday, we'll talk about media coverage of the explosive round of stories from The Guardian and Glenn Greenwald. So if anything stood out for you, please email it to us, feedback@yourcallradio.com. You can also email us show ideas and guest ideas. Today, it's our Agenda for a New Economy series, and we're talking about the Trans-Pacific Partnership. The Obama administration and his team of trade officials have been working with international partners on this for the last 3 years. The negotiations have been conducted behind closed doors, leaving all of us in the dark and Congress. The negotiations and the details have not even been posted online. It's supposed to be, it will become the largest free trade agreement in the world if it passes in October. And we're talking about it today with Ben Beachy, Research Director with Public Citizens Global Trade Watch, and Arthur Stamoulis, Executive Director of the Citizens Trade Campaign. And if you have any questions about the TPP, we'd love to hear from you. This will affect technology, pharmaceuticals, banking, the environment, farms. If you work in these industries, how will this affect your industry? And if you have questions about how it'll change or affect you, we'd love to hear from you. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment at yourcallradio.org. We'll talk about Fast Track in a minute, but first let's hear from John in San Francisco. Hi, John. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Rose, and thank you very much for taking my call. Needless to say, I'm unalterably opposed to this trade agreement, and it's truly amazing to me that anybody in Congress would even consider voting for it. The trade agreement adds credence to the great critic of the world global economy is Vandana Shiva. She often appears on Link TV. She's a physicist by training. And she mentioned some years ago that the purpose of globalization was to permit transnational corporations to rule the world to suit themselves. And what we're witnessing here in this trade agreement, if it was to go through, is some sort of globalized fascist system. Because if you look at the definition of fascism, it is the union of corporations with government. And here you have corporations pretty much doing whatever they wish. They can sue any government for, they can poison the water, and if you try to stop them from doing it, they'll sue you. So it's a dreadful proposition, and I'm totally amazed that someone with President Obama's educational background would even consider supporting such a thing instead of going all out and supporting it.
Well, thank you for calling, John. Speaking of supporting the TPP, Ben, we did some research. I mean, we were initially going to have a debate on this, and the only major group that we could find that supports this is the Cato Institute. I mean, who else is supporting the TPP?
There are 600 individuals who, unlike the rest of us, have privileged access to the text of this agreement, who have privileged access to the negotiators, the small group of Obama administration negotiators who are hatching the deal. The vast, vast majority of the 600 individuals are an explicit representation of some of the largest corporations of the United States. They're not just in support of this deal, they're helping to write it. Earlier, for example, Katya was mentioning some of the provisions that are in this deal that would, threaten to turn the, our Google searching into a maze of, censored messages. That's because of the rather draconian copyright measures that have been proposed for the deal, which would be, essentially a way to sneak in many of the provisions that were completely shot down, rejected not just by the U.S. public, but by U.S. Congress with the famous Stop Online Piracy Act, SOPA, that was defeated. Most people remember when Wikipedia and Google went black for a day last year. That was to protest SOPA, and SOPA was then defeated. But now a lot of the same corporations that were behind that are trying to sneak those same provisions into this deal. And one of those corporations, one of those industry groups, is the Motion Picture Association of America, essentially Hollywood, some of the largest Hollywood corporations that would want to make sure that that users cannot share and alter or and post user-generated content that might use video or other contents that they believe that they have control over. These are the same groups that were behind SOPA, and the same groups that you have banking industry groups as well supporting this deal, hoping to get through some provisions that would enable them empower them to weaken a lot of the post-crisis re-regulation of Wall Street that we've seen. A lot of the stuff that's been going on in Dodd-Frank, like the Volcker Rule, to try to rein in the excessive risk tanking that Wall Street took on that led us to the Great Recession. Many of those banks have been hard at work on Wall Street and in Congress to try to lobby against those new rules on Wall Street. And that which they can't get done there, they've been trying to get done through this trade deal including a lot of different terms that would make it easier for financial corporations to claim that financial regulations violate their rights, that rights that are created by and enforced by this deal. So those who are supportive of this are fairly narrow slice of society, and it's the same slice of society that has been hard at work in our Congress, pushing against consumer safeguards, pushing against financial regulation, pushing against access to medicines, pushing against provisions that would ensure a continued freedom of access to the internet. It's not the majority. Like I mentioned at the beginning of the show, you have this is a transpartisan issue where you have proven majorities of Republicans, independents, and Democrats all saying, enough. We're tired of this model. We're not opposed to trade. We're for fair trade. This is not fair trade. This is more of the same. We've had enough of these deals. We've seen their evidence for decades now, and I thought we elected someone that was going to bring change.
Well, hardline conservative groups historically have opposed trade. They were speaking out on NAFTA in the 90s, but I think it's interesting to talk about the specific corporate interest and what they want exactly. Arthur, so we heard about the MPAA. Can you give us some other examples of groups that support this trade deal?
Yeah, so big oil, big coal, big gas, the extractive industries are pushing for provisions in the TPP, that not only make it easier for them to use quote unquote rip and ship resource extraction, where they take the raw materials of any country, aren't required to use it domestically, aren't required to process it domestically. Just ship it anywhere in the globe where they're going to get the highest price. But also, again, these investor state provisions that allow them to challenge any new climate regulations, any permitting decisions they disagree with, any new regulations or even court decisions. And so, within the World Trade Organization, we have what's called state-to-state dispute resolutions, where individual countries can challenge one another's policies, and under that system, the United States has already lost more than 90% of the more than 65 cases that have been brought against us
So portions of the Clean Air Act, the Endangered Species Act, the Marine Mammal Protection Act have been rolled back. More recently, we've seen country of origin labeling for meat products come under attack, tobacco controls to protect our kids come under attack, even internet gambling regulations. Where the TPP goes beyond that is by granting corporations, individual corporations, the access to these tribunals where they can initiate cases themselves. Right now, under a number of smaller free trade agreements and bilateral investment treaties that the U.S. is party to, we already see the system being used to attack the clean air rules in Peru, mining laws in El Salvador, a court decision against the oil giant Chevron in the Ecuadorian Amazon, among many, many other examples. But expanding the system throughout the Pacific Rim is going to make these types of cases much more commonplace. And frankly, by expanding the powers to big capital exporting nations like Japan, could bring the chickens home to roost in a lot of ways, and we could start seeing our own laws attacked even more frequently than they already are under the WTO by granting individual corporations the power to you know, virtually overturn any new policies that are enacted that cut into their expectation of profits.
So where are we right now in terms of timing? The Obama administration wants this done by October?
Yeah, that's right. So this has been under negotiation in earnest for more than 3 years, with 17 major rounds, each round being, you know, about 10 days long. And they are really racing to finish it by October. There's a round coming up this July in Malaysia. There's rumored to be another round taking place in September. They're hoping to get it done by then. I think many people think that's an ambitious deadline, and it may get pushed back a little bit. But clearly the window of opportunity to influence this thing is rapidly closing.
That's Arthur Stamoulis, Executive Director of the Citizens Trade Campaign. Ben Beachy is Research Director with Public Citizens Global Trade Watch. We're talking about the Trans-Pacific Partnership Free Trade Agreement. If it does go through, it'll become the largest free trade agreement in the world. And if you want to speak out on this, now is the time. As Arthur says, the window is closing. What are your thoughts on the TPP? What questions do you have? This will affect everything from food safety and banks to medicine prices and internet freedom. If you work in these fields, what concerns do you have? What changes do you think will come as a result of this agreement? The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. What are you most concerned about? There's a long list based on the leaks. You can email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from John in Mountain View. Hi, John.
Oh, hello. Thank you for taking my call. And you've mentioned how the Congress people cannot see the current provisions that are being discussed. So they're even asking to see them. However, there is all the ample detail that has been leaked, and the congressman can speak out now on the subject of all these individual details that we've heard of and announced that they are opposed to them, as well as announcing that they can oppose fast-tracking and require they have plenty of chance to read the bill over ultimately. We can all write our congresspeople or phone them to ask them to do this. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for calling. Do we know where the leaks came from, Arthur?
No comment.
No comment. Ben?
Also no comment. Okay. My comment is no, I don't know.
Okay. Well, you know, to John's point, I have a comment on my Facebook page saying, how can we stop this wheel from turning? Our protests aren't enough. To me, it seems more and more people are hearing the truths and starting to feel unable to do anything about the transgressions. The administration doesn't listen to the words of the people. They're on their own agenda and disregard most of the population. So how can we organize a big enough statement to get them to listen to us again?
This is Ben. I can. I think that question leads us to the point about fast track, which is critical. Fast track is was a power grab that was cooked up by President Nixon. It's a In the Constitution of the United States says explicitly that, you know, Congress has exclusive authority over trade policy. And, you know, that's how it's been for, you know, over 200 years and before Fast Track existed. And then Fast Track, what it did was it allowed the executive branch, the president, to completely bypass Congress and pick the countries with which we negotiate, set the terms of the deal, like what's going to be in it. Is access to medicines going to be in it? Is, you know, our incentives that would allow for more offshoring for corporations, multinational corporations, are those going to be in it? Are we going to talk about public health and environment in there? It allows the president to also then, once the deal is done, sign it, actually, before Congress even gets to look at it. And then when it's sent to Congress, Congress has an expedited, you know, a vote. It's been described as a legislative luge run because what is presented to Congress is this sweeping, like, you know, 900-page trade deal, and in addition to that, an implementing legislation that is basically the bill that rewrites domestic policies so as to conform to the terms of this trade agreement. And all of that's dropped on a congressperson's desk, and they have a short window of time, you know, a 90-day period to go through the entire Congress. They are not allowed to offer any amendments on this deal. It's just an up or down vote, and there's limited debate. And so this is really just like a battering ram through which really bad trade agreements have been pushed through Congress. This would be less bad. It would be no less democratic, perhaps, but less impacting if these deals were just limited to trade. But as we keep mentioning, you know, this implicates everything from, you know, the food we eat to the stability of our economy to our access to the internet to the environmental safeguards that we all rely upon. And so when it's actually about trade, you don't need Fast Track. There's been hundreds of trade agreements that have been negotiated by administrations since the 70s, since Fast Track was started, that have passed through Congress without this really, you know, anomalous anti-democratic, anti-constitutional procedure called Fast Track. It's only been used 16 times, and those 16 times have been for deals that are of the NAFTA model of trade. NAFTA itself was passed through Fast Track, World Trade Organization, a number of bilateral deals, and now the Obama administration hopes to use this really, extreme maneuver called Fast Track again for the Trans-Pacific Partnership. Probably because, you know, if Congress got a chance to like piece through it and change it, and, you know, if there was a full debate on it, you would find that, you know, these sweeping provisions would be picked over, eliminated. There'd be public uproar about this. The same reasons why, you know, same reasons why many of the details have not been released to the public of the deal itself. And so really the opportunity to address the question, the opportunity to defeat this thing comes with a defeating of Fast Track. And that's because they're going to likely try to bring up Fast Track for a vote before they bring up the deal itself. And so what they have to do is they believe that in order to get past such a sweeping deal through Congress to really just, you know, slide it down that legislative luge run, they need to create the luge run first. So they need to have a Fast Track bill that Congress approves. And so really the first opportunity to make sure that the TPP doesn't pass is to defeat Fast Track.
What are you hearing from public citizen members? What's getting them to take action on this?
It's interesting because you have people who are most concerned with, like, you know, access to the internet, who are really concerned about, you know, access to medicines in developing countries, people who are concerned about offshoring, or people concerned about the investor-to-state dispute resolution mechanism that Arthur mentioned, which allows private corporations to completely skip our domestic legal system and, you know, sue the United States government over, you know, health and environmental policies. Some people are concerned about the merits of the deal, all that I just mentioned, which is in the content of the deal. And then you have others, some of whom are, you know, self-described conservatives, who say, you know, I'm a supporter of the Constitution, and I believe it's fundamentally unconstitutional, undemocratic for any policy that, you know, the Constitution says should be in Congress's domain, especially policies that could impact so greatly our daily lives, to completely circumvent Congress. to circumvent the normal democratic procedure, be written by and signed by the executive branch before Congress gets a good look at it. And so you have a number of people from both right and left saying that they are very opposed to fast track and asking how we can defeat this. One thing that gives us a lot of hope is that fast track is a horribly controversial procedure, as you can imagine. Like, you know, it's been opposed in Congress from the right and the left as well. In 1998, you had fast track failed miserably when Clinton administration tried to bring it up. And there's quite a bit of speculation that it would be very controversial. I mean, Congress isn't passing very much at all these days, much less an extremely controversial, battering ram procedure such as fast track. And so there's quite a bit of hope that we could actually defeat fast track. And if we defeat fast track, then TPP would actually have to get the debate it deserves. And upon getting the debate it deserves and the scrutiny it deserves, we don't believe there's much chance it would pass.
Well, we've got about 5 minutes left. So if you want to weigh in on the Trans-Pacific Partnership, if you have any questions or comments, if you work in an industry and feel that you will be affected by this, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. Let's hear from Cynthia in San Francisco. Hi, Cynthia.
Yes, hello. I was wondering what your speakers think about the possibility that this new trade agreement is to check the rise of authoritarian communist China and their 1.3 billion consumer market. And that's my question.
All right, thank you. Arthur, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so, you know, this is a pact that's all about deregulation, privatization, trade liberalization, and the U.S. Trade Representative and the architect of the TPP have made it very clear that they eventually want every country to join this agreement. I think it's absolutely true that negotiators would not like to have China have a seat at the negotiating table during, you know, these early phases where they're setting the terms of the agreement, because China, frankly, has so much economic power that they'd be a countervailing weight to the United States. But the goal of this is to eventually get China and every other country to accept the rules of the game that the TPP architects are setting. You know, that big oil, that Wall Street, that the big pharma, all these different corporate interest groups are really pushing, and that's what this is all about.
And what are your thoughts on China, Ben?
Yeah, I mean, I think mainly what the United States is trying to do is not so much to isolate China. In fact, you know, Hillary Clinton said late last year that she would love nothing more than, she invited China to join, essentially. I think really what this is about is certain corporate interests making sure that they define the future model of trade. China's currently in the midst of negotiating its own trade deals with its partner, with its neighbors. We're now negotiating the Trans-Pacific Partnership with many of China's neighbors to say, look, this is the model of trade that U.S. corporations would like to see, and it's a corporate protectionist model. It's one that allows private corporations to completely circumvent domestic legal systems and sue over health, environmental, and other public interest policies that they don't like. That's not included in China's version of trade. And so I think you find that this is a way to define for China the model of trade that if it's going to play ball, has to adhere to.
And Rob just wrote in and said, is the TPP similar to the International Agreement on Capital that was proposed and abandoned a decade ago? Arthur, do you know about the International Agreement on Capital?
No, Ben.
I'm not exactly sure which one that refers to. There's been several agreements that, like Basel Accords, for example, and those are essentially agreements that said banks should have adequate capital available in their reserves so that they don't take undue risks, many of which led to the financial crisis of 2008-2009. Those capital reserve requirements are among the things that we fear could be attacked by foreign banks under the TPP. So it's related in the sense that international agreements that have encouraged greater financial stability, such as capital agreements, are threatened by this deal.
All right. Thanks for the email, Rob. Celine in Capitola also writes in and says, in our letters to our congresspeople, we can remind them of the protests in Seattle that stopped the negotiations of the World Trade Organization in 1999 and tell them that some of us who were there are still alive. And if the Occupy groups join us, this deal is going nowhere fast. We can do this thing to keep them from passing the TPP. Arthur, what are your thoughts on that? And what are you hearing from supporters of the Citizens Trade Campaign? How are people taking action on this?
Well, you know, that's absolutely right. You know, corporate power grabs disguised as trade deals have been stopped time and time again in recent decades. You know, the World Trade Organization's expansion, the free trade areas of the Americas, the multilateral agreement on investment, a whole host of, you know, bilateral and regional free trade agreements have all been defeated. And what it's taken is for people to get the word out, to drag the trade agreement out of the shadows, to explain to their neighbors, to organizations they work with, you know, just how this is going to impact people's daily lives and their communities. And, you know, when that happens, people start to mobilize and the whole thing.
So let me ask you this, Arthur. Sorry to cut you off. We only have 2 minutes. If you're talking to your neighbor who hasn't heard of this and they don't have an hour to listen to you, what would you say to them?
I would say that this is an expansion of the job offshoring that we found under NAFTA and an expansion of special rights for corporations that undermine our democracy. And then, you know, you can go from there. But this is really a trade agreement for corporations that feel that Chinese sweatshop workers are overpaid, that want to undercut working standards around the world. And if you care about jobs, if you care about the economy, the environment, public health, you need to know about this agreement.
And Ben, what would you say to someone who doesn't know much about this?
I'd say that they should go online and visit exposethetpp.org, where we have all this laid out in the plainest of English, where we say, you know, this is how exactly corporations are going to get unparalleled powers to be able to attack domestic public health, environmental, and other essential safeguards. You know, if you want to know more about offshoring, how this is going to impact food safety or financial stability, go to exposethetpp.org, and there's an array of fact sheets and tools there that lay it out in very simple and quick form.
So we've got just over 4 months until October. Best thing to do, spread the word, call your congressperson. Anything else on your lists, Arthur?
Those are the big ones. And if folks want to do more, you can go to citizenstrade.org. There's a whole activist toolkit. We do monthly briefing calls for activists and organizers, and people can get more engaged. But the big thing is spread the word and let your member of Congress know that you're watching, that you want them to oppose Fast Track for the TPP.
And Ben, final thoughts, 20 seconds?
Yeah, I would just say that this is our generation's chance to, you know, be able to stop this horrible trade model in its tracks and say we actually want a positive, pro-worker, pro-environment, pro-health trade deal. We don't want more of the same NAFTA model. This is our chance to stop it.
Ben Beachy is Research Director with Public Citizens Global Trade Watch. Arthur Stamoulis is Executive Director of the Citizens Trade Campaign. And you can find out more about the TPP Trans-Pacific Partnership at yourcallradio.org. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. What explains the growth of immigration detention centers? On the next Your Call, we'll have a conversation about the explosion of people being held in facilities due to their pending legal status. Over 33,000 immigrants are detained daily in over 250 facilities across the country. This lockup system costs $2 billion a year. What are the conditions in these facilities and who's running them? Who's being detained? And how will the immigration bill affect mass detention? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Joe Burke is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.